ॐ भद्रं कर्णेभिः शृणुयामदेवा भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टवागुंसस्तनूभिः व्यशेमदेवहितैर्यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमि स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ ओ गॉड्स मे वी हियर ऑस्पिशियस वर्ड्स विद आवर इयर्स व्हाइल एंगेज्ड इन सैक्रिफाइसेस मे वी सी ऑस्पिशियस थिंग्स विद आवर आईज व्हाइल प्रेजिंग द गॉड्स विद स्टेडी लिम्स मे वी एंजॉय अ लाइफ दैट इज बेनिफिशियल टू द गॉड्स May Indra of ancient fame be auspicious to us. May the all-knowing Purusha, God of the earth, be propitious to us. May Garuda, the destroyer of evil, be well disposed towards us. May Brihaspati ensure our welfare. Om, peace, peace, peace. We are studying the Mundaka Upanishad. And we are almost towards the end, the final mantras, the climax of the Upanishad. We are on mantra number 5. We're going to start mantra number 5. So in these mantras, the result of all of these teachings is given. Result is moksha, liberation. And that is described in quite a bit of detail. And some of these are very important, very sublime, poetic, but also philosophically very important for Vedanta, these mantras. What happens when you become enlightened? What is the result, especially for our this cycle of birth and death? How does that come to an end? What constitutes freedom? And these are this is the source on which later Vedantic doctrine, what we talk about in other Advaitic texts, which are much later, they all trace their teachings back to such Upanishads. So it's important. Mantra number 5. Samprapyainam rishayo jnana triptaha kritatmano vitaraga prashanta te sarvagam sarvata prapyadhira yuktatmana sarvameva vishanti. I'll read out the translation and then go into the explanation. The translation is 5th mantra. Having attained this, the seers become contented with their knowledge, established in the self, freed from attachment and composed. Having realized the all-pervasive one everywhere, these discriminating people, ever merged in contemplation, enter into the all. Again, a lot to unpack here. The entire spiritual journey has been packed into this mantra along with the practices and the result. So let's just see. I will take up the words in the mantra in a certain sequence so that the whole thing makes sense to us. So there is this word, dhira. Let's take that as the base. Dhira means the heroic spiritual seeker. It means the person who is striving to equip himself or herself with the qualifications for enlightenment. Shankaracharya here gives the essence of the dhira. He says, who are these dhira, these heroic spiritual seekers? In Shankara's commentary, it says, atyanta vivekino. Atyanta vivekina. Those who are extremely discerning. Viveka is the ability to discern, to separate two things which come to us mixed up. The ability to separate in our understanding, not physically, in our understanding. Life comes to us mixed up. So the ability to separate good from bad, the right from wrong, real from unreal. So this is self from not self. This is viveka. Viveka means to be able to separate, distinguish. So only when we have distinguished, then we can pursue the right and give up the wrong. Then only we can realize what is real and what is an appearance. Because it's all coming mixed up to us. Then only we can realize what is the self and what is the not self. So first is viveka, and this is the quality of the dhira. But it's not enough to know. We must live it in our lives, and for that, the rest of the practices are there. Who are these dhira? He says one word, important word is yuktatmanaha, who are always engaged in spiritual practices. This is the basis of spiritual life. Those who are up and doing. Our revered Swamiji in the other New York center, Yuktatmanandaji. His name is Yuktatmanandaji. So Yuktatmanaha, the person, the seeker, who is engaged in spiritual practice. It's not enough to say, I've heard a talk and I know I'm Brahman. Now, why isn't my life changing completely? No. You haven't done anything at all. So the real spiritual seeker is up and doing. Sri Ramakrishna gives many examples. One of the most striking examples he gives is that of a thief who late in the night has got news that just beyond this thin wall, thin mud wall, is a pot of gold. Now, will he get sleep at night? Will he not be up and doing how to break through this thin wall to get that pot of gold? Similarly, the spiritual seeker knows that I want God realization, I want enlightenment. He knows that it's possible. If I try, it's possible. One young man came to become a monk, and the president of the order at that time, Swami Bhuteshanji, this young man said, I want to realize God, I want to be enlightened. Please bless me. And a very remarkable blessing. He said, if you try, you will get it. There's a slightly conditional. You must put forth some effort yourself. It's true, we do. We do. But that's the importance here. Yuktatmana. What should you try? Try all the four yogas. Start working. Be devotional. Repeat your mantra. Try to meditate. Serve others without any without any selfish desires. Be selfless and engage in jnana yoga. The shravana, manana, nididhyasana, hearing and reasoning and meditation. So there's a lot to do. Karma yoga, bhakti yoga, dhyana, meditation, and jnana yoga. Lot to do. Yuktatmanah, who are constantly engaged or up and doing, hard at work. At God realization, at enlightenment, in spiritual progress. Then what happens? If you do that, then the next term which is important is Vitaragha. Three terms, Vitaragaha, Prashantaha. And then, all right. So Vitaragaha means those whose minds have been purified of strong vasanas. Vasanas are our worldly vasanas, which pull us towards kama kanchana, towards lust and gold, like worldliness. We're driven by that. Most people in the world are driven by that. But that has to be purified. Sri Ramakrishna said the one condition, one must overcome this drive for worldly pleasure seeking and worldly acquisition. So, Vitaraga, those who are able to overcome their raga dvesha. There's strong attractions for particular things in the world and strong repulsions for other things. Because of these, people are continuously 24 hours engaged in the world, trying to rearrange the world so that what we are attracted to, those things will be with us. What we are repulsed from, what we don't want, somehow we will escape those things. But we are destined for failure or for only mixed success. Because what we get in life, good and bad, it really depends on our past karma. So what we should do is, if you're spiritual seekers, like the surfers ride the waves in the ocean, similarly, the waves of karma, results of karma are coming to us. We should be able to skillfully negotiate that so that it takes us continuously towards God realization. And the way to do it is nishkama karma. Karma is coming. And the activities we are doing, results are coming, but do it without any worldly desire. Do it only with the desire for God realization. Do it only with the desire that it karma yoga will give me purification of mind. Obstacle towards God realization, raga dvesha, impure mind. Then what is the solution? Pure mind, chitta shuddhi. What is the method? Karma yoga, selfless, selfless life. Because the greatest impurity is selfishness. Everything. Name, fame, pleasure, achievement, wealth, everything must be for I, me, this one. this strongly binds us to this little personality. What we are trying to achieve is just the opposite. I am the one reality in all beings. At the same time, if I hold on to these things which bind me strongly in this one personality, I'm pulling in two different ways then. I'm trying to confirm myself in this little personality. At the same time, I'm trying to say I am the all. It's not possible. So we must loosen this body identification, this little personality identification. And the core of this identification are these impure desires, vasanas. So the first problem is impurity of mind, solution is purity of mind, and Karma Yoga is a powerful way of doing that. Vitaraga, what happens? The strong likes and dislikes weaken. The mind is purified, a freedom, a lightness, a peace, an even-mindedness. No st strong ups and downs. Strong ups and downs are a sign of strong vasanas, likes and dislikes in the mind. So it kind of evens out. A calmness comes, a purity of mind comes. Vitaragaha. Shankaracharya here, it says, Vitaragadi doshaha. So the defects such as raga dvesha, likes and dislikes, you transcend them, you purify them, they lessen. They lessen their hold upon us. Then the second thing is, second level problem is scattered mind, a flickering mind. And the mind must be steady. It must hold on to the truth. It must hold on, whether you're doing bhakti, whether you're doing meditation, and of course, whether you are doing the Vedantic inquiry. The mind which you're going to use must be steady. In the Kathopanishad, remember, we were introduced to the chariot analogy. The chariot analogy. The body is the chariot. The senses are the horses. And the sense objects are, of course, the roads the horses are running on. But the mind is the reins by which you control the horses. The reins by which you control the horses. It's like the steering of the driver. That must be steady and fixed and responsive. If it is loose, then you can't control the body and the senses. You can't control the chariot and the horses. So who is the controller? Who is the driver? Not you, not us. We think we are the driver. No. It's buddhi, intellect, the one which takes decisions. Buddhi is the driver. Then the self you, the real you, is the passenger. And the journey is from not knowing the real you to knowing the real you, from the apparent self to the real self. So that's the beautiful analogy of the chariot. Now there, the mind, they say, samanaska, attentive mind. Mind, what is now very popular, mindfulness. Attentive mind, focused mind, concentrated mind. Ability to take hold of something and then hold it until it is achieved. We catch hold of many things and let go. We catch hold of the right thing also, but then we let go. That's our problem. Shankaracharya translates as Prashanta Uparata Indriyaha, where the senses have been brought under control. A settled mind, undisturbed mind, not a mind which is continuously disturbed by the garbage being brought in by the senses, things to be seen, things to be heard, smell, taste, touched. That kind of mind is continuously in turmoil. So when the senses are brought under control, the mind becomes steady and fixed. This is called prashantaha, peaceful. Then what happens? It says, samprapyainam. The jnana triptaha samprapyainam. The third level is, so ignorance is removed by knowledge. So by knowledge, you take up the course of practice of Jnana Yoga, which is Shravana, hearing and studying Vedanta, then thinking about it till one gets clarity. After getting clarity, meditating upon it till it becomes a living reality. That becoming a living reality, he calls it here, samprapya, attaining which, Shankaracharya explains, samprapya, samavagamyena, atmanam, rishaya, darshanavantaha. Having attained it. What is attainment? He says, you become a rishi. And the translation of the word rishi, it's usually translated as sage, but there's a particular technical meaning. The technical meaning is rishaya mantra drashtaraha. The seers of the mantras are called rishis. Here, Shankaracharya takes it as rishaya darshanavanta, those who have seen. Not only those who have read books, those who have heard the lectures, those who have attended classes, those who have meditated, those who have done bhajan, those who have done aarti, those who have given in charity. No, no, no. Ultimately, it must be, you must be, I must be, Rishaya, Darshanavanta, the ones who have seen. The ones who have seen the truth. What is the truth? That you are the self, you are Atman. It must come to that finally. What will happen then? He also says, Jnana Triptaha, you'll be fulfilled by knowledge. When you see, what the result will be, Tene, Shankaracharya explains, Teneva Jnanena Tripta, Na Bahyena, Tripti Sadhanena, Sharira Upachaya Karanena. Tripta fulfilled. By this knowledge, you will be fulfilled. Your happiness, peace of mind will come by this reality, by what you have seen. What seen about yourself? You will realize you literally do not need anything from the world. You do not even need this body. You do not even need this mind. They're all very good. But you are this limitless existence, consciousness, bliss. The world needs you. The body needs you. The mind needs you for its very existence. Satta Spurti, for its existence, for its light, awareness. The world and the body and the mind, they need you. But you are fulfilled by realizing your unlimited nature. Tripta, Jnana Tripta, fulfilled by this knowledge, by realization. Na bahyena vishayena. He says, not by external things. And gives an example, a gross example, Sharira Upachaya Karana, that which nourishes the body. So, what are people normally tripta? That means fulfilled by, satisfied by food and drink, your favorite snacks and dishes. And so that goes to nourish the body. Then there are desires which we fulfill to nourish the mind. Books and entertainment and knowledge and creativity. These are all external. Not those, not those. You're fulfilled by the realization that I am Brahman. Then comes eternal peace. This is called Jnana Triptaha. And as a result, what happens next? Kritatmana. You have done. Kritatmana means the one who has done what has to be done. Here, Shankaracharya explains, Kritatmana. Paramatma Swarupena Eva Nishpannatmana Santo. Those who have become one with Brahman. They have done what has to be done in life. They have realized what has to be realized in life. They have got what has to be got in life. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, having got that, after which nothing more, nothing greater remains to be got. You may still get many things in life afterwards. You will. And we'll see why you will get many other things in life afterwards. But you will never consider anything afterwards to be any greater than what you have got by this knowledge. Nowhere close. This is called Kritatma. There's a person who has got. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Yam labdhva na chaparam labham manyate tato adhikam." Having attained which, got which, one gained which, one does not consider any gain in future to be greater than this. And he also adds there, yasmin stito dukkhena gurunapi na vichalyate, established in which the greatest of sorrows, which means, by the way, sorrows will come, even great sorrows may still come. And we will see later why great sorrows, good and bad things, will still come from the enlightened one. But you will not be shaken by any of them. Dukkhena gurunapi na vichalyate, it cannot shake you. This is called Kritatma. In Panchadashi, the author Vidyaranya Swami says, why is an enlightened person so satisfied, so happy, so fulfilled? Because he says he has done what has to be done in life. One, he has realized what has to be realized in life. Two, and he has got what has to be got in life. For the first time, you're fulfilled in life. So what happens to such people? They realize, what have they realized? Sarvagam sarvatah prapya attains that reality which is everywhere, all pervasive. And Shankaracharya here makes this important comment. He says, Sarvagam, sarva vyapinam, akashavat. Just like sky pervades the entire universe. You have this, you realize that which is not limited. It's not in one place and not in the other places, not like that. It's not in one time and not at other times, not like that. It's on one thing and not in other things, not like that. So, beyond limitation of space, time, and object. It's everywhere.
There's no place you can go where you will find that which you had realized yourself to be. It will not be available. There's no such place. Wherever you go, it will be available to you. It's not that it's only in the Himalayas and not in New York or something. No, it's everywhere equally. Then it may be more easily manifest in some places. I'm not denying that. Careful. In a meditation hall, in a sacred place, in a holy place, in the company of a holy person, that reality may be much more easily accessible, much more manifest, no doubt about it. But you'll realize it's always there. It's always there. It's there everywhere, number one. And number two, it's always there. It's not that you will realize it after death or after going to heaven or after something, after a particular experience. No, you will realize even when you get this knowledge, you will realize it was there always. It was always there. And it is you. It's Atma, it is self. Sarvagam, sarvatah prapya. He says, sarvatra prapya. No upadhi parichinnena, ekadeshena. Kintarhi, tad brahma eva advayam atmatvena pratipadya. Very, very nicely put. This word, sarvatah prapya, means attaining everywhere. Wherever you go, that one is available. Whenever it is, that one is available. And whatever you experience, that one is available all the time, effortlessly, continuously available. He says, not upadhi bhedena, not that Brahman is only, upadhi means the name and particular name and form through which Brahman is experienced. So only when it is in the name and the form, this particular form, and I call it Krishna, then only it is Brahman. No. So it is so in Shiva, the same thing. It is so in Kali and in Durga and in our Father in heaven, in Jehovah, in Allah, in all of that. In the clear light of the void of the Mahayana Buddhist, it's continuously available in and through all of these. These are different conceptions, names and forms, upadhi. Why just these divine names and forms? Even ordinary things, in all men and women and all in the trees and the sky and the earth and the rock and the dog and the cat, everywhere shining forth. Not in one particular upadhi, but everywhere. That is Brahman. Brahman is unlimited by space, unlimited by time, unlimited by object, available everywhere as how? Very important. Atmatvena pratipadya. Realizing I am that one. Therefore, I am unlimited by time. I am unlimited by space. I am unlimited by object. Unlimited by time means I am eternal, immortal. Unlimited by space means there's nothing beyond me. Everything is in me and or is appearing in me. Unlimited in object means there is no second reality apart from me. That means whatever I see, whatever I've experienced and not experienced, whatever there is in this universe is not a second thing apart from me. They're all yours. They are all you, in fact. No one is far apart from you. And no one is an other. Holy Mother's last words before she passed away, she said, my child, this world is yours. Learn to make it yours. There is nobody is an other to you. There's nobody is an other to you. It sounds like very common sense and sweet advice, but it's very deep Advaitic, non-dual truth. Sarvatah prapya. Then sarvameva avishanti. At the point of death, one merges into this Brahman. The individual being who was liberated was the Rishi Dhira, who realized I am Brahman, will live for some more time because of past karma. We'll see that in the next mantra. And we will be called Jivan Muktabayas, those who recognize this person to be enlightened. And then when that particular body dies, sarvam eva avishanti. The physical body, the subtle body, the causal body will merge into their respective basis, and the Atman, of course, is one with Brahman. That is the end of the Jivan Mukta's life. And after that, what is called Videha Mukta, bodiless liberation. Of course, all this is from our perspective. The Upanishad is telling us from our perspective. The enlightened one's perspective, the moment the enlightened one realizes, we'll say that I am. And I always was, and I always will be Brahman. Yes, this body is there now. It's continuing as a limited being. And after some time, the body will disappear. From my perspective, from your perspective as the enlightened one, no difference really. But from the other's perspective, who see the enlightened one present and a great blessing to our He is with us. It's the greatest of blessings to be with such a person. And then at one point, the body goes away. That will be discussed now. When the body goes away, what happens of the enlightened one? How is it different from the non-enlightened one's death and so on? You know, most revered President Maharaj, Swami Smarananji Maharaj, passed away yesterday. He was 94 years old. He was the president of our order. A wonderful, wonderful monk. It is really a privilege to a little bit also what we have seen of him from a distance. He's, of course, very senior. There are so many little touching little stories, but the sheer simplicity of this person, and an unfeigned simplicity. He's not trying to be simple because he's a monk. There are those who try, by the way. I'm simpler than you. There's a competition for being simple. No, but he was this. That kind of simplicity comes from a real purity, inner purity, a childlike simplicity. So let me give you one little example. Those who have been to Belur Math, you know that there is the most crowded of all festivities. All festivities there are very crowded, that being India, and religious festivities are the most crowded. The most crowded of all is what is called the Sadharan Utsav. In other words, it's called General Utsav. And that's 1 week after the birthday of Sri Ramakrishna. So what happens is the big monastery is all the gates are thrown open for 1 day to everybody who comes in. And the idea is to provide small traders, you know, small shopkeepers, a way to do business. So a cloth seller, a toy seller, somebody who's selling coconut water, little stalls. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of little shops and hundreds of thousands of visitors throughout the day. That's the only day in the year where the gates remain open from the morning till night. And it's an incredible crush. If you walk there, it'll take you several minutes. What could have taken, you can go in 5 minutes, but it'll take you 20, 30 minutes across because it's so many people. All right. So when revered Swami Smarananji Maharaj was the general secretary of the order, that means he's the senior most executive of the entire order. So one of these days, one of these general utsavs, Sadharan utsavs, in the evening, he came to take a walk from outside his office to, you know, take a tour of what's going on outside. And of course, tremendous crush of people. And he was surrounded by a group of monks and other non-monastic assistants, because he's literally the basically the administrative head of the entire international organization of our order. And he's over 80 at that time. So he walks down this narrow street with little shopkeepers everywhere, and there are hundreds, thousands of people in front, behind, on both sides. And they are passing a particular shop. Shop means it's a footpath. It's not even a real shop. They're sitting on the footpath with a piece of cloth and selling their wares. And they're all very poor people. So this poor little shopkeeper, he was selling toys, children's toys. And the particular toy he was demonstrating, it's very popular among kids. So it's like it shoots up as a parachute. And then parachute opens, it comes floating down, and there are lights flashing in it, and kids love it. So it just goes up and then it comes down like this. A small thing about this, so big. And he showed it to the general secretary as the general secretary was passing by. It flew off, and it's those who have seen Belur Math, it's the Sarada Peeth campus on the outside. So that's where it happened. And the parachute went over the fence into the ashram campus. And then suddenly they saw that Swami Smarananji was nowhere to be seen. The general secretary had disappeared. And of course, the young monks and the assistants, they were all in a tizzy. Where did, because he's a very senior, elderly man. He could be lost in the crush. Where did he go? What happened? Where is he? And then suddenly they saw him coming out of the main gate of the that Sarada Peeth campus, you know, where the fence is. And he came back with that little toy, the parachute, and returned it to that poor shopkeeper. And then he explained to the puzzled group who were supposed to be surround him. You know, they explained, "Oh, you see, he's a poor man and he lost the toy. It went over the fence to the other side. And since they will not let him into the college campus, but they won't stop me. You know, I was the head of this ashram for, he was the head of the ashram for decades, long ago. And of course, he's the general secretary. It's basically, it's everything belongs to him there. So they won't stop me, you know, the guards won't stop me. So I went in there and I found it and I returned it to him." Now, this 80 plus year old senior most monk, he went crawling into the bushes and the trees there in the darkness to find one little parachute toy and comes back and returns it. So, and that's so typical of him. Everything, anybody who has seen him will always say he's always been that way. He always considered himself just like anybody else, just literally like the youngest person who had joined the order, the poorest of the beggars standing outside the gates of the ashram, and the newest of devotees coming into the ashram. He was just sort of one with all of them. All, and this is for decades. For the enlightened one, so he passed away. And just today it was the cremation, tens of thousands of people coming. It's a little bit of it is online. I think I saw some of the rituals. So this is the mantra. Having attained that knowledge and fully satisfied by it, one becomes a rishi, a seer of that truth. And kritatma, fulfilled, having got what has to be got in life, done what has to be done in life, known what has to be known in life. Which is possible only when the person is vitaraga prashanta, calm and settled and pure in mind. How is that possible? Yuktatma, be up and doing, be up and doing. And the one attains that ultimate reality is called sarvagam, all pervasive, not limited by time, space, object. Sarvatah prapya, in every experience, everywhere that is available and it is seen. The only difference is that we don't see it because of ignorance. But otherwise, it's available to us also. For us, it is unavailable due to our ignorance. To the enlightened one whose ignorance is gone, he sees it's equally available to everybody all the time. Vivekananda called it the open secret. And then lives like this as long as the body persists. And when this body goes, the person is called Videha Mukta, bodiless liberation, merges in Brahman. Merges in Brahman means no actual merging in Brahman. That person knows that I am this limitless Brahman. That's what is called merging in Brahman. All right. Next mantra is very beautiful and will be familiar to some of you at least. Let me chant it. Vedanta Vijnana Sunishchitartha Sannyasa Yogad Yataya Shuddha Sattvaha Te Brahma Lokeshu Parantakale Paramritah Parimuchyanti Sarve. This might be familiar to some of you, especially from Hindu households, especially from the south of India. So this is a mantra which is chanted when a monk visits your house. If you are a traditional Hindu family, often traditional South Indian families. So if a monk visits your house, you are supposed to chant a few mantras in greeting, and this is the central one among them. What does it mean? Vedanta Vijnana Sunishchitartha, very beautiful mantra. Those to whom the entity presented by the Vedantic knowledge has become fully ascertained, those who are assiduous and have become pure in mind through the yoga of monasticism, all of them at the supreme moment of final departure become identified with the supreme immortality in the worlds that are Brahman, and they become freed on every side. All right, we'll see what unpack this. So when the monk comes, this is chanted. What does it serve? It shows to the householder who's receiving the monk the high spiritual goal of life embodied by that monk. It also reminds the monk what he's all about, why he is wearing that. Somebody said, "Why do you wear an orange bathrobe?" No, sorry. Said, "Why do you wear an orange bed sheet?" So why are you dressed like that? What is the meaning of being a monk? So the monk is also reminded, and the householders who are receiving that monk, they are also reminded of this high goal of spiritual life. So let us look at the words. Vedanta Vijnana Sunishchitartha. Such a beautiful term. Vedanta. What is Vedanta? Vijnana, a science. The body of knowledge called Vedanta. Sunishchitartha, artha, the purport of it, the meaning of it, the point of it all. Sunishchita has been ascertained, has been clarified. These are the ones who have ascertained the final purport, the essence of the science of Vedanta, the body of knowledge called Vedanta. Who are these? These monks. So Vedanta Vijnana Sunishchitartha. The whole thing refers to the monks whom you are greeting. Vedanta, of course, we know. It is the final conclusions, the teachings of the Vedas found in the Upanishads, like this Upanishad, for example. So, Vijnana, knowledge. What is the purport of it? Artha, what is it? It has been put in, it can be put in very simple terms. Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya Jiva Brahmeva Anapara. There is an ultimate reality, existence, consciousness, bliss, limitless existence, consciousness, bliss. What is this world? It's an appearance in that ultimate reality, Jagat Mithya. What am I? You are that ultimate reality, Brahma Jiva Brahmeva Anapara, and you are nothing but that. That is an important thing. You are nothing but that ultimate reality, which means you are not what you think you are. This little body, this little personality, that's a mask you're wearing. It's not, it has a beginning, it is changing, and it will have an end. But you don't begin with this body, and you will not die with the end of this body. You don't begin with the blossoming of this personality and the final fading away of this personality. You are not either of them. They are dependent on you, but you are not either of them. So, or you can make it even more compact. Tattvamasi, you are that. Aham Brahmasmi, I am that. That is Vedanta Vijnana Artha, the point of Vedanta. You can make it even more compact. Om. Just Om. What does it mean? This entire experience which you are having is the waking experience. It is the entire subtle experience going on in our minds, which is most manifest in dreams. That is called the subtle world. And then there's the entire dream world. And then the seed form of it experienced in deep sleep. That is called the causal world. The entire physical, causal, and subtle and causal worlds are represented by A, U, Ma in Om. And the silence beyond Om represents the reality. And I am that reality, the silence beyond Om. I am not this waker. I am not this dreamer. I am not even the deep sleeper. This deep sleeper, waker, and dreamer, the physical, subtle, and causal, are appearances in me, one unlimited. Why unlimited? Because the waker and the deep sleeper and the dreamer, they limit each other. The waker is the one who lies down in the bed and goes to sleep there. The dreamer is the one who is going through many dream worlds. And the deep sleeper is the one where the object and subject are merged in blankness. And all are appearances and disappearances in one underlying consciousness, which I am. That is the Turiya, Om. You can make it even more compact, silence. Not an unknowing silence, but the silence of the enlightened one. So, Vedanta Vijnana Sunishchitartha. How do you clarify the knowledge of Vedanta? Sunishchita, ascertain, fully ascertain. Sunishchita, fully ascertain. What does it mean? So, three stages. First of all, I don't know what is the Vedantic knowledge. Then for you, Shravana, listen, study. At the end of that, you should be able to say, I know precisely what Vedanta is saying. So you have ascertained the meaning of the Vedantic texts. But now you may have doubts. I have many problems, logical questions. It doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. I would like to, oh, this is not clear. That is not clear. I know what the book says. I know what the Swami says. But this is not clear. That is not clear. So there's the second stage, reasoning, where raise every possible question. Try to go through the answers which are provided by the teacher or the texts and try to see what is being said. Then you ascertain at the second level. First level, you've got the meaning of the book. Second level, logical. You understand it now. Earlier information, now knowledge. You have understood. Then third level is you say, I understand it. It's clear to me. Not reflected in my life. My life is still going on. I'm the same old dude who was there before all Vedantic study. It's not changing my life. I'm not overcoming suffering. I'm not attaining that limitless peace which is promised. So that you meditate upon the clarity so obtained. Stay with it. Stay with it. Try to live it. Try to express it in, as Vivekananda said, my mission in life, it can be put in a few words, to preach unto humanity their inner divinity. And how to make it manifest in every movement of life. To try to manifest in every movement of life. Try to walk the talk. And then meditate upon it. That is Vedantic meditation. What will be the result? Sunishchitartha. That is full ascertainment. You have fully ascertained. There is no more doubt about what Vedanta says. There is no more doubt about the understanding of Vedanta. No more confusion, logical, rational questions, confusion. And you will also say it's real. You will say, I know what Vedanta says. I have understood what Vedanta says. And it's real. This is called Sunishchitartha. What a beautiful phrase. Vedanta Vijnana Sunishchitartha. That's what we all want to be. Who are they? Here I must say the Upanishad is unapologetically monastic. Sannyasa yoga yataya shuddha sattvaha. Those who have taken to sannyasa yoga, they have become monks. You have embraced monastic life. You have actually given up worldly pursuits, turned your back upon the world, and only one goal is to realize this Vedantic truth and embody it in life. One goal is to be free in this life itself, living in this body, jivan mukta, sannyasa yoga. So, technical meaning of sannyasa yoga, I must put it there because Shankaracharya in the commentary has given. What does sannyasa, monasticism mean in the Vedic, in the Vedantic context? What's the meaning of becoming a monk? Yes, you are celibate. Yes, you have no property. Yes, if you're part of a monastic organization, you're obedient. So in the Catholic monasticism also. Chastity, poverty, and obedience. These are the vows. So, monastic vows are there. But technically, what does it mean in the Upanishadic context, in the Vedantic context? So, there's a technical meaning here. The meaning is this. There are these three kinds of worlds. One may, the devout Vedic person, devout Hindu may aspire for. One is human birth. Next life, I'll be born in this human world. I'll be in a good human birth. And then after death, I aspire to the higher heavens, which my ancestors have gone to, the heavenly life. And then the highest possible attainment is called Brahma Loka, is the heaven of Brahma, the highest one. The first one is attained by human birth. This is a little technical, a little arcane, but they try to get it. It is attained by children. So you marry and you have children who will perform the funeral rites for you by the merit. See, it's a Vedic context. Everything is Vedic yajna and sacrifice and all of that. So by the merit of those Vedic rites, the Shraddha and all, performed for you by your children, by that merit, you will attain a human birth next life. Many ifs and buts here. First of all, you have to marry and you have to have children, and the children should be willing to perform the Vedic rites for you. And you have to believe in all of this, that this will propel you to a human birth next life. So anyway, that's the first goal. People want that. The second goal is heaven, attainment of heaven. So even here, in the Katha Upanishad, in the Mundaka Upanishad, we had a section on Vedic rituals, which will take you to heaven. Nachiketa's second boon was about what will take me to heaven. Because he saw his father and uncles and all, they were performing these things. That was what's going on as religion. So you go to heaven. There's a second goal. After death, I will go to heaven and stay there. For that, I have to perform certain Vedic rituals, which will give me a lot of merit. Even now, I've seen. In the United States, I've seen a very devout Brahmin family. They invited me, and I will not say where, but they invited me for a ritual. It was a very big ritual, very expensive. With some of the bigger ones tend to be very expensive. They had got priests over from India and so on and so forth. But all of it was a Vedic ritual to gain merit, so which will presumably propel the performer of the ritual to higher lokas and all. That is not Vedanta. In fact, all of these are to be rejected. That's what Vedanta is going to tell us. You have to go beyond all these. That is the ritualistic religion. That is the conventional religion. This world and the next world, I'll be happy. I'll still keep going around in this merry-go-round. That is not what Vedanta is about. Not any kind of spirit. All kind of spirituality takes you beyond this. This is all within the realm of cause and effect. All within the realm of karma. So that's the second goal. The third, second goal, heaven. Third goal is highest heaven, which is attained by certain Vedic meditations called Vidya, which will take you to the world of Brahma, the highest possible attainment in the Vedic hierarchy of heavens. So all of this I'm summarizing. It says, पुत्रेण मनुष्यलोकः, कर्मणा पितृलोकः, विद्यया देवलोकः. दिस् इस् अ फ्रेज् यूस्ड् इन् द बृहदारण्यक उपनिषत्. बै चिल्ड्रन् यु अटेन् the mortal world. This is a secular meaning also and religious meaning. Secular meaning, of course, is you continue in this world as your children. That's why people have children. Then, so that's a goal. And that's a primary driver of your human life, family and children and all that. Then the next goal is karmana, by Vedic rituals, pitriloka, the heavens of ancestors. Remember, all this, these are not teaching. This is all supposed to be given up. This is the meaning, I'm explaining the meaning of sannyasa. And third is vidyaya, by Vedic meditations, devalokaha, brahmaloka, the highest heaven, the attainment of that. All of these are temporary. You come back from them again and you go around in the cycle of birth and death. What is sannyasa? Sannyasa is giving up all these. A monk is supposed to give up the desire for children and the attainment of continuity in a biological sense and the attainment of human births. Give up that desire. Give up ritualism to attain a variety of heavens, which are just continuation of this world in other worlds. Same thing, repeated. And give up even the highest religious goal of Brahmaloka. All of them, what might be called, it's literally the seventh heaven. They have a gradation of heavens. The seventh heaven is Brahmaloka. Give up all heavens. Vivekananda says, all heavens and hells do I give up. Hells I give up by giving up bad karma, sinful karma. Heavens I give up because I am not doing the good karma for getting heaven. I am doing the good karma as chitta shuddhi, purification of mind. All right. This is called sannyasa yoga. Now remember, this is what is done in Vedantic sannyasa, which is what technically, so when I am a Vedantic monk, this is what I stand for. This is what anybody who is a spiritual seeker has to do. You may not be a formal monk, but it's literally true. You want to realize yourself as Brahman. That means you want to go beyond cause and effect, beyond this world of birth and death. That's what you want to do. That's what you're claiming. I want to do that. That basically is the essence of monasticism. So internally, you have to be monk-like. Internally, one has to be monk-like. I have seen through this world. Buddha himself says, upon enlightenment, very beautiful Edwin Arnold's poetry, The Light of Asia, I think. So there he says, what is Buddha said when he stands up and he's paraphrased it, Edwin Arnold. He says that I have seen through your house of illusion that no more shall you build these prisons for me. That means this game of life is at an end. That means this game of life and death. So sannyasa yoga, this is sannyasa yoga. It's a very powerful, very, it's kind of the most profound step that you have to take mentally, everybody. If somebody becomes a monk without mentally accepting this, it's a tragedy. And if somebody does this mentally, that I really don't want any more of this continued existence, another birth and another birth and another birth. Birth, not just birth, it means another death and another death and another death. I don't want any of it. So, that he or she is a monk, sannyasa. Yatayaha, another name for monk is yati. So yati means monk. But technically, the word yati means person who's up and doing. Gambhiranji translates this as the assiduous. There must be spiritual struggle. Vivekananda, when he toured India on foot, going from place to place, he saw thousands of monks. He says, is this a mockery? Thousands of people living on public charity and behaving like beggars? Is it possible for all to be meditative and studious and devotional? No. And he said, monks will do all the spiritual practices and they will work for the welfare of the society which feeds them. And that's how he introduced this huge karma yoga. Schools, colleges, hospitals, relief activities, all of that. That will be one form of sadhana for this group of monks, the group of monks he started, us. And of course, you will carry on your meditation, your devotional practices and your Vedantic inquiry. Why wander around uselessly like a bunch of beggars? Yatayaha, those who are up and doing, shuddha sattvaha, with their minds purified. So these people, you cannot remain in this way if the minds are not purified. You'll be dragged down again and again into worldliness. Shuddha sattvaha. Minds are purified. Sattvic minds. What happens to them? At the point of death. Te brahmalokeshu parantakale. So parantakale, at the final end, the big end, end of all ends. So here is the difference between the end, the death of an unenlightened person, and the death of a jivan mukta, enlightened person. In the death of the unenlightened person, what happens? His physical body dies. But the subtle body and the causal body with the reflected consciousness goes on to other births and other lives. It will go to one of those heavens which the person has hopefully worked for. If the person is a very nasty kind, will go to one of the hells. And then come back again. That individuality will come back again, be born in this human birth again to carry on further spiritual evolution. This is the story. And it's a story because the enlightened one will consider this whole thing to be a story. But for us, it's practical. So this will go on. Again, another birth. Again, death. Every birth means a death. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Jatasya hi dhruvo mrityu. Of those who are born, certain is death. There's nothing more certain than that. Or somebody said humorously, life is a disease with 100% fatality rate. Life is a disease with 100% fatality rate. We have got the disease called life, so we are bound to die. But then Krishna also says, Dhruvam janma mritasya cha. Those who die, they are bound to be born. Until you attain enlightenment, the machine will go on grinding. They will not be let off. But for the enlightened one, he says, a beautiful word is used, parantakale, the final end, the end of all ends. The game of life is over. The storms have dissipated, and there is, as the songwriter says, a festival of rainbows in the sky. Akashe Ram Dhanur Mela. What happens when the storm goes away? There's a rainbow. There's a festival of rainbows in the sky. What happens? The cosmic game of your life has ended after countless births have gone by. And this is the culmination where you realize you're set free from this, Vivekananda says, this cage, bamboo cage, which has imprisoned the lion of Vedanta. This is low lion of Vedanta, burst forth from this little ramshackle cage. Don't let it imprison you anymore. Parantakale. Exactly what happens at that point of death, we will see next. Then where will this person go? Brahma lokeshu, will attain to the worlds that are Brahman. Shankaracharya explains here that there's no world called Brahman. It realizes that you are Brahman. The individual merges into Brahman. That is also a way of speaking. Really, the truth is, this limitless Brahman I am, always have been, always will be, that is realized. From the enlightened one's perspective. And from our perspective, that which was the individual enlightened one has now merged with the all, as Vivekananda says, the I has all become and the all is I and peace. That's the end of his song, Song of Sannyasi. The I has all become, the all is I and peace. Parantakale, paramrita, parimuchyan. So, and then another point he makes, the worlds, attain the worlds of Brahman. There are no worlds of Brahman. Shankaracharya explains there, because there are many, many spiritual seekers, many, many who will become enlightened while living, jivan mukta. So their perspective, as if they attain many, many worlds of Brahman. But basically, they realize that we are all that same one limitless existence. Paramrita. Paramrita means paramam amritam, the highest immortality. See, we who are going through life and death, in one sense, we are immortal. We don't get destroyed at death. Nobody is destroyed. Krishna says to Arjuna, O Arjuna, all these kings and warriors you see arrayed around, and they have been here earlier. And they will be here after this life also. Which means we are going through this cycle of birth and death. Many births, many deaths. Do not be afraid that death will destroy us. But that's not true immortality. It's actually a sort of mortality plus, more mortality. In one life, we die once. But this means that we will keep on dying from death to death. Upanishad says, the one who sees difference here, naneva pashyate, one who sees difference here, one who sees multiplicity here, that one will go from death to death. Mrityu sa mrityu maapnoti. For the one who sees non-duality, the realization of the truth, that one will attain immortality. That is called the highest immortality. Not this birth and death, not that. Parimuchyanti sarve. So, they are
merged in Brahman, they are liberated. It's Parimuchyanti Sarve means liberated from all sides. Shankaracharya gives the example of a pot being broken. So the space in the pot is merged in the great sky. But there's no merging of the space in the great sky. The fact is, the space enclosed by the pot and the great sky, Akasha, they are same. They always were. If you ask the space, oh, so you must be very happy. You were enclosed in a little pot. Now you are free with the, you're merged with your granddad, this vast space. You say, I am always that. You and your little pot have done nothing to me. You built a pot enclosing up, you think you have enclosed me. But I, space encloses the pot. Pot doesn't enclose space, really. The pot is in space. Space is not in pot. But it seems like that. The moment we enclose it, Sri Ramakrishna says, you have 10 pots, and then you enclose and 10 pots, and the space in that, it's empty pots. But you name them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Then you start, you'll see very soon you will start thinking of the first space, second space, third space. It's the mind which says that is space number one, this is space number two, because they have been labeled 1, 2, 3, 4. Nothing has happened from the perspective of space. Nothing has happened from your perspective. But, and so this is realized. Paribuchyan, from all sides you are liberated. From all sides you are liberated. Forever. That one we'll have to do next. The exact mechanism. What happens at the death physically, mentally? What happens at the death of an ordinary person? What happens at the death of the Jivan Mukt, enlightened one? That is the seventh mantra. And that distinction will be drawn in more detail. From here on till the end, it is just this living liberation and liberation after the death of the body. Just liberation, moksha, the result of it all. That's going to be discussed. Quickly now, I'll look at the questions. Mary Eli says, is it necessary to believe in God? You mentioned faith last week and seems to imply a personal God who's looking out for the person, as in Christian belief. Or are you referring to consciousness divine that is the purpose of the world and all of beings? Still seems that there is randomness. Yes. Is it necessary? Straight answer, no. There are Advaitic texts which go straight to this truth that you are Brahman without taking the God route. But I must mention, in all honesty, the traditional Advaitic texts, they all give a role for Brahman, Saguna Brahman, Brahman with attributes. So when you talk about this world, we as individual beings, here is the cosmos before us. And the Vedanta will always say there is a, just as there is consciousness associated with an individual being, which is I or you and these people, there is a consciousness associated with all beings, the entire universe, and that's God. Consciousness associated with all bodies and minds, this entire universe is called Virat. We studied it in Mandukya Upanishad. That's the cosmic form of God. Consciousness associated with all minds, all of our minds, is called Hiranyagarbha, the cosmic mind. And consciousness associated with our causal bodies, each of us has a causal body, is called Ishvara or Bhagavan. Consciousness with Maya is Ishvara, God. Consciousness with Maya plus all subtle bodies, all minds, is cosmic mind, Hiranyagarbha. Consciousness associated with Maya and all minds and all the entire physical universe is called Virat, literally meaning the vast. So just as we have as individual beings, you are pure consciousness, but limited by one causal body. You know, we had a name for that in Mandukya called the deep sleeper, Pragya, if anybody remembers. Then we are the consciousness associated with our mind. In dreams, it is most evident in our dream world. I, the consciousness with an individual mind, I play out my dreams. That is called Taijasa, the fiery one in the Mandukya language. And then I, the consciousness associated with this physical body, one physical body, is called Vishwa. Similarly, there is a cosmic body, cosmic mind, and cosmic causal body called Maya. That is God. Now, you might still ask, if you are following carefully, you might ask perceptively that. Still, that would be faith. Because I exist in this body and mind, I know it for sure. And this physical world is presented to me, I know that for sure also. This is my experience. But that there is a consciousness behind this entire physical world, that is a matter of faith, you might say. It's logical, sounds logical, but it's still a matter of faith. That is true. It's a matter of faith.
If you do not accept that, it's still possible. You can go straight to the realization, I am the limitless existence consciousness place. But the traditional path lies through God. But it goes beyond God. In Advaita Vedanta, it goes beyond God. Just as it goes beyond the individual, it also goes beyond God. Girish says, are God realized or Jivan Mukta? God realized, self realized, constrained by the space time causation framework, or can they transcend? Can they perform miracles? Okay. First of all, are they constrained? No, they are not constrained in the sense they are Brahman. You are Brahman. So from the Brahman perspective, you transcend time, space, causation automatically because you are Brahman. Time, space, causation is part of the dream. However, now, can the individual Jivan Mukta, the individual enlightened one, on the stage of time, space, causation, perform miracles which are called siddhis in Vedanta, in yoga in Vedanta? Can they do that? There, the answer would be not necessarily, but it is often seen to be so. That would be the answer. Answer would be yes and no. It's not necessary that a person who is enlightened can perform miracles, but it's often seen that such people who have become enlightened, they have extraordinary powers. Remember, all spiritual paths, bhakti, Vedanta, yoga, especially in the path of yoga, Patanjali yoga, these powers are most manifest, siddhis. Also in Tantra or in Buddhism, everywhere the masters have cautioned us against these powers. They will divert a spiritual seeker back into worldliness. So, is it possible? Certainly. Is it common? Certainly. Among enlightened ones, such powers are common. But these powers can be a real danger. They can divert a spiritual seeker. And the presence of the power does not mean a person is enlightened. I know of people who have powers who are spiritually very ordinary. There'll be people here who are spiritually more advanced than such people. I've met such people. Straight away, I met a person who had these powers, and an American gentleman. So to test him, I asked him, simplest thing, you know, many things can be magic show. So I asked him, just now, what's in my mind? Can you tell me? He told me straight away. Straight away, precisely, exactly what I was thinking, the thought. And I said, he's a spiritual seeker. What does your guru say about these powers? He's a Vedantic practitioner. He said, my guru said they are nonsense. So, you have to be careful. Priyanka says, in Yoga Sutras, Patanjali recommends the following for a peaceful mind: friendliness towards the happy, compassion for the unhappy, delight at the virtuous, and indifference to the wicked. Could you explain the last point? Is it only internal indifference? How to replace anger with indifference? Indifference is not a good word. Upeksha, that is, for those who harm you directly, upeksha. Don't take the harm into account. The problem is, if you take the harm into account, natural reaction is anger. And the one who gets angry, first of all, destroys or damages his or her own spiritual path. You can take corrective action. You can stop the person from doing evil. If you're an activist, you can work for remedying the situation, all of that without anger. If you are a yogi, anger is not permissible. It is seriously damaging to your own peace of mind. And it doesn't help. It never helps. So upeksha, your question was how to replace anger with indifference. Yes. By noticing the serious damaging effects of anger on my spiritual and worldly life. Remember, you have never been angry and later on, 5 years, 10 years down the line, you have never, you know, looked back and said, that was great, I was good that I was angry and hit out at those people. Over time, we all regret our anger. So what is done in anger is always regrettable. Whereas, it doesn't mean that you will have no action. You will take action, whatever is necessary. If it's something that is damaging to you personally, you may completely ignore it and forget it. If it is something that has to be taken care of in society, in community, somebody is doing something wrong and evil, then you will be up and doing, you will, if you can make a difference, but again, without anger. If Mahatma Gandhi could fight the British for the independence of India without anger against the British, imagine. He had many friends who were Englishmen. He had no personal anger against the British. It was an evil and had to be removed. That's all. Amira says, Vedanta helps
We understand why not to be selfish and run after money and fame. The sanskar still comes back sometime. Yes, certainly. Question, why should I do this materialistic work if I cannot think about the results, such as money and fame? What is the point? See, if I have a desire for this, I must pursue it within the limits of dharma. That's the only way to overcome and think about the defects of pursuing pleasure and accumulation. Also, remember, whether you are a monk or a householder, you have there are no free lunches. You have to take care of yourself, stand up for yourself. You have to have a job if you have a family, if you have a, to take care of, if you're staying in society, you have to take care of yourself. What Vivekananda said for monks also, yes, the society takes care of you, but you should take care of the society. So your time and energy should be devoted to those who are helpless in society to take care of them. So one should pursue. The job has to be done. If it's something that you have taken up, a role in the world, you are a manager of a company or you have taken up to earning money, do it well. If we don't do our worldly duties well, we will not do sadhana well also. That's another thing. It's a mi same mind. We have the same mind. So when it is a time for meditation, there also we will be lax and unmotivated. More difficult, continue being ambitious. Instead of being ambitious and hardworking about the world, be hardworking as Karma Yoga. Do it really well. Earn the money which is necessary, but do it as the worship of the Lord. Brinda says, why Shravanam is greater than any other way in attaining knowledge when it's experienced through anything and everywhere. It's experienced, but you will never recognize it. Brahman is experienced, it's true. The enlightened one will experience Brahman in all experiences. But unless we have the knowledge, we will not recognize it. Like the story of the washerman with the diamond. He had the diamond and was experiencing it all the time. He was using the diamond to scrub dirty laundry. So only when the diamond merchant introduced him to it, what was already in his hand. Look, this is the most magnificent diamond I've ever seen. If you cash it in, all your needs will be removed forever. All your want will be removed forever. Similarly, Sanket says it's possible to retain the sense of I-ness while enjoying the bliss of Atman. If not, is the bliss felt by the mind a memory of Ananda, the nature of Atman? No, it's not memory. Enjoying the bliss of Atman as I, the enjoyer of the bliss of Atman, it's still possible, but it's what is called a reflected joy in the mind. I know that in my real nature, I am the Atman. And this knowledge itself gives a lot of happiness in the mind continuously. So that happiness, that might increase and decrease because it's in the mind. It might be episodic also. It's like what you are asking is it possible to enjoy the bliss of seeing my own face in the mirror without the mirror? No, you can't. When you have a mirror, you can see the face, but remember, the face and the joy you're getting at seeing your own beautiful face is you're seeing a reflected face. So the joy you get at seeing the face, the joy you the enlightened one gets in the mind is also a reflected joy. The bliss of the Atman, that is, Atman as bliss, is not a particular feeling. It is that limitlessness of existence consciousness which itself constitutes bliss. Bliss. Shankaracharya says, it's an ocean which you have within. You are that ocean. The spray from that ocean is what the world madly runs after as happiness. So it's reflected. Shanli says, can we get salvation just by doing rituals without having the teachings of Vedanta or pedantic knowledge? Vedantic knowledge, you must have it. Vedantic knowledge is self-knowledge. Without, if the problem is that I do not know my real nature, then the solution ultimately has to be I have to know my real nature. If you still say after that, yeah, I know it, but I don't understand it, then mananam, understand it, what you know. And say, I know it and I understand it, but it's not real, it's theoretical. Then nididhyasanam, stay with it until it becomes a living reality. Without knowledge, it's not possible, at least in classical Advaita Vedanta. Does Videha Mukti signify that past karmas are burnt out? Yes, all of that will come in the next mantra. Unfortunately, we couldn't get to it today. I didn't want to rush it. It's a beautiful mantra. What happens to karma? What happens to the body? What happens to the mind? What's the difference exactly between the enlightened person's death and the non-enlightened, ordinary person's death? All those things in the next mantra. Parul says, which shloka did you say appears thrice in Bhagavad Gita in one of the recent classes? Yes, it is the same teaching that everything is done by the gunas, by prakriti. Atma is the witness. We are vimu ahankara vimuratma kartahamiti manyate. That's one of the things. It's in different, I don't remember the references, in three different chapters, at least thrice the same teaching comes. Everything is done by prakriti, by nature. You are just consciousness, the witness of everything. And why are we deluded into thinking that we are this limited person doing things and experiencing things? It's because he says, ahankara vimurdatma. The ego deludes us. So I, the pure consciousness, I'm not the ego, but I get identified easily with the ego. Being the ego, now I get deluded because the ego is very much connected with the mind and body. Whatever happens in the mind, I am thinking, I am remembering, I am enjoying, I am desiring, I am suffering. Whatever happens in the body, young, old, diseased, healthy, I. Do the Vedantic rituals, there's no Vedantic rituals. Vedic rituals are there, and of course, pujas have an effect on the mind to aid Adhikari for spiritual pursuit, certainly. But when you come to Vedanta, if you are already ritualistic, good, you should reduce the rituals. Don't give them up. If you practice them, don't give them up, but reduce it. Cut it short so that you can have, not for relaxation, rest and recreation, no, using the time and energy for Vedanta. So have the rituals, but less of it. And if you don't have rituals, you might consider introducing a simple little ritual, a little puja. There's a lot of positive psychological effect on the mind. Something that you do daily, for example, a small little thing. It could just be chanting a few mantras and waving incense in front of the deity or offering some flowers or something. Something. Offering a little food like that. Do V. Srinivas Raju says people in the order of Ramakrishna Loka talk about Ramakrishna Loka, same as Brahma Loka. That's my view. That in all religions, theistic religions, there's a talk of a high heaven, which is a spiritual heaven. So the heavens which the sannyasi rejects are this world, the otherworldly heavens. But the spiritual heaven, you know, Vaikuntha, Kailasha, Goloka, in the Vaishnava and the Shaiva traditions, the heaven, the Christian heaven, Father in heaven. What are those? Are they to be rejected also? No, those are also moksha. That you go there, you will never be reborn again. But that is a devotee's way of looking at it. So you still retain your individuality and you go to the presence of God and you are never reborn again. So that's one kind of moksha. But there you go. The difference will be mentioned again in the next mantra. The Vedantic freedom, moksha, is freedom here and now. Right now, the job is done. Nothing more. There's no more coming and going. But the devotee's heaven, the Ramakrishna Loka, the Brahma Loka, the Christian heaven, the Islamic heaven, the heaven where you go and stay with God. And the Vaishnavas have a lot of analysis of these heavens. This is Salokya, Samipya, Sayujya, various kinds of freedom in these heavens, attaining some kind of freedom while retaining an individuality, not being reborn again. So that's also freedom. You'll never come back, but you'll enjoy the bliss of the presence of God. It's beautiful. But Advaita Vedanta says you realize the ultimate truth here and now, you are free. There is no coming and going. Even in the dualistic freedom, there is coming and going. At least there is going to that heaven. That much is there. The difference is the dualistic conceptions of freedom are all after death, there in heaven. See, after time, there. And in that heavenly body, you will get a divine body and all of that and stay with God. A very beautiful conception. All of it faith-based. And it is all time and space and object. Because an Advaitic realization is beyond time, space, and object, here and now itself. You are Brahman, that's it. Not that you become Brahman, you know that you are Brahman. That's final. Sanket says, and does Krishna refer to the minds of the Krishna or the kings arrayed for battle or their Atman? Minds. I just mentioned causal body, subtle body will go on to the other births. Physical body dies. And this causal body and subtle body carry the reflected consciousness, Chidabhasa. That's the transmigrating jiva, which goes from birth to birth. Kishore Acharya says, along with hearing, analysis, and meditation, should a student of Vedanta give up ritual practices completely, or should they also continue deity worship and other rituals? In the initial stages, one should, for a long time, continue the deity practice and other rituals which you are doing. As I said, cut them down. The emphasis should be more and more on Vedanta. Study Vedanta, reflect on Vedanta, and meditate on that.
Use your time and energy for that, but don't immediately give up the external practices. So we, as brahmacharis, in our initial days in training, for many, many years, we would do ritualistic worship, devotional practices, mantra japa, and all the seva, and of course, Vedantic study, all of it together. Don't give it up. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.